This is Deb Tribe.
Deb Tribe.
On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
I think it's fair to say that there have been hundreds of different diets that have existed over time. I'm thinking Israeli army, more recently paleo, keto, there are Atkins, there are so many diets. Have you ever adopted one, and what reasons made you do that? How has it worked or not worked for you? Give us a call now, 1300 222 891, or you can send a text 0467 922 891, or you can tweet me at Deb's Tribe, because I've got a man in the studio that knows a lot about diets and about food, and he's fresh from a global food summit in Milan. It's nice to welcome Professor Andrew Lowe, who is Director of Agri-Food and Wine at the University of Adelaide. Great to have you in the studio, Andy.
Yeah, thanks, Deb.
Just briefly, what was happening in Milan?
Yeah, so I have to pretend I was working really hard in Milan, but I have to admit it's a beautiful city, and Italy is always a pleasure to go to. Great food and wine in the location. And as part of a global food summit, of course, you've got to sample the great food and wine from the region, which...
It's hard, but somebody's got to do it.
I probably couldn't see another Parma ham just for a few weeks. But look, it was the Global Food Summit, and really what was there was a showcase of some of the latest ideas and what's coming online in terms of food innovation. So we heard lots around, you know, new protein sources and lots of ways that kind of technology is getting into food production and processing. So it was a really, really interesting meeting.
Well, we're going to pick up on that in a minute, because the first diet trend I'd like to talk to you about, and I don't know that I've ever seen one so serious and based on so many moral grounds, is the massive shift in a lot of people's diets from an omnivore diet, an omnivorous diet, to a vegetarian or vegan diet. Is it true that that trend is happening globally? It's certainly happening here in Australia, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a trend globally, and I think previously issues around vegetarianism and veganism were largely driven by animal welfare concerns and issues. But I think the recent shift and trend has really been around environmental issues and the cost to the planet of actually producing meat. And that's driven a real, you know, kind of new wave of adoption of vegetarianism and veganism. Mm-hmm. Now, we probably shouldn't get it out of proportion too much. I mean, in Europe and in the UK, there is an increasing proportion. I think it's up to about 14% now of the population. But here in Australia, it's still quite low. But when you look at the numbers, I mean, the numbers have doubled, but then you're still in single-digit percentages of the population here in Australia.
But you're right. The reasons, it's animal welfare, it's sustainability for the planet, because of course we've got methane producing gas emission creating four-legged animals on the earth, and plus there are issues around their welfare. But if we all became vegetarian or vegan overnight, what would happen to the food system globally?
Yeah. A lot of farmers would go out of business. So look, there's a balance to get there. I think if we look back to where humans come from, I mean, we are omnivores. Our diet is designed around a mixture of meat products and vegetables, grains, fruit. And I think over time, what's happened is our diet has become, particularly in the West, has become much more meat focused. So today, the average Australian would eat five times the amount of meat than is recommended by the World Health Organization.
So what is what is the amount we should be eating?
So currently we eat almost 100 kilos of meat a year.
Each.
So that's about a me-sized chunk of meat to be eaten a year. I'm just under 100 kilos, by the way. Whereas we probably should be having about 20 kilos of meat a year, and that's about 60 grams a day. And Deb, I'm indicating to you the size
grams
of it, and it's not very much meat. And
but when you think you might go to a pub and they offer a 250 gram Scotch fillet, that's a few weeks worth of...
That's right. So look, we probably shouldn't be having meat every day, for example, and there are other kind of plant-based protein alternatives that we could look at as well that can substitute in the place of meat. So I think we've got used to eating too much meat and thought that that's what our diet should be, and we should be pulling back on that. Now, if we did reduce the amount of meat we ate, or more people became vegetarian and vegan, a lot of the land that we use for agriculture is used for raising cattle and animals. So about 70% of all the arable land in the world is used for rearing cattle. And so, you know, we just heard from the UN, from the Intergovernmental Panel for Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, about the massive wave of biodiversity extinctions which are now wrapping around the earth. And largely those are driven by habitat clearance for agriculture.
Oh,
so
dear.
Agriculture is the most extensive change to natural habitat on earth. So if we were to reduce the amount of meat, more people become vegetarian, we wouldn't have such a pressure on our systems, and we wouldn't have such a pressure for greenhouse gases. So that's the simple answer.
We're getting a few questions through on the text line, and we've only got Andy for about 20 minutes or so. So if you would like to ask him a question about food, I did say there's nothing he doesn't know. That's a big claim to make, but I'm going to make it anyway. It's bold. Call him now on 1300 222 891, or text on 0467 922 891. Jason texts through, said, "I'm not diabetic but a bit overweight, but I've taken on the diabetic diet. Low carb, no sugar, only what's in the food. I've lost over 25 kilograms. I'm now 98 down from 123, and I don't really exercise." Now, is the diabetic diet a good one for non-diabetics to adopt?
Look, I don't know exactly what the diabetic diet is, and losing weight is, you know, it's an equilibrium between calories in and calories out. So, of course, you can lose weight by not eating as much, even if you don't do exercise. I mean, there are other benefits to exercise, healthy circulation and things like
but
that.
But how much? I mean, carbs and sugar are what are being cut in this diet.
Carbs and sugar. So, you know, as well as the trend to eating more meat, our diet has become much richer in refined sugars, fats and salt. And it's that heady combination of sugars, fats and salts that tastes really good. So, of course, our foods over time have gone towards that. So if you cut out sugar or only use kind of unrefined sugar or sugars that are present naturally in a range of products, that's a big benefit to the diet, because those sugars, the refined sugars, can easily be pulled out of foods, processed very quickly. The sugar molecules rush around your body and then are fixed into fat within the system. So if you reduce the sugar content, it's going to have an immediate benefit, and you're still getting plenty of carbohydrates, which are complex sugars basically, in a range of grain and vegetable-based diets.
Well, that's the other thing. Or not all carbs are equal, are they?
Yeah.
I mean, eating a bucket of chips and eating some white bread is not the same as having a really rich in grain bread, or I don't know. What are the great best carbs for us to eat, Andy?
So it's probably, a really good diet has a really good basis for vegetables and grains. So, you know, we talk about the 5 and 2. I mean, I probably don't eat 5 servings of vegetables a day. It's probably only about less than 5% of the population do, but it's a good thing to aim for. And the good thing about grains as well is different types of grains and different types of vegetables also provide us with protein. But you need different sorts of proteins and different mixtures of proteins together to give you that kind of whole protein diet. So mixing vegetables and grains together in a diet is probably the best basis for a diet. And then on top of that, you know, a moderate meat consumption, dairy consumption, and a few nice things like sweets and chocolates, dark chocolates, those are probably the guidelines that are out there.
I like the dark chocolate aspect.
The dark chocolate. You can still enjoy dark chocolate and a little bit of red wine, you know, it's still fine. You know, we don't have to walk around in hair suits and self-flagellate at night. But the problem is that you're constantly fighting our brain, and our brain is kind of wired in to oxytocins, and it's kind of those reward chemicals that are released when you eat that heady cocktail of fat, sugars, and salt. So salted caramel, you know, has it together.
It's got it all.
Yeah, it's got it all. You eat that and your brain goes, wow, I'm in love with that. I want to eat that again. And so you know that these things are good for you, and you know that you shouldn't be eating the bad things, but our brain is always combating against us.
Well, that's right. You know, I only read this week a new research that's come out about processed food, which has long been blamed for the obesity epidemic that we're facing in the Western world. And this new study, it was a small, and it was 20 people who spent 2 weeks eating either processed or unprocessed diet, and then they swapped, and they found that we put on more weight eating processed food, but that we still like it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Why do you're trying to say why? Why do humans act against their own health in decisions around nutrition? I mean, these things our brains are wired to. Are these ancient things?
Yeah, I think these are ancient. So, look, this is a really interesting question. So, I do work at the university. My background is in evolutionary biology. Now, so I haven't looked at the evolution of diet. But one good explanation for this is that these types of sugars and sweet things would have been incredibly rare in ancient history in our diets. But for example, when you came across a beehive and you had an opportunity to eat honey, you'd gorge on it. Gorge on it because you wouldn't eat it again for another month or so. You wouldn't find it. So of course you gorge on those things when you find them. So that is hardwired into our brain. It's just that we can now have it every day.
Yeah, wow.
So interestingly, at the meeting in Milan, there was a group in France that had produced a kind of processed. We've got lots of kind of trademarks and markings around food. So the origin of food, the health of food. But they'd also come up with a kind of scale of how processed the product was. And they're hoping to, you know, launch this internationally so it becomes a processing scale. But as you say, even reducing the amount of processed food we have can significantly improve the diet. And if you reduce the amount of processed food, then it reduces easily available sugars, fats, salts within the diet, introduces roughage, balances that out with proteins. So if there's one thing you can do, it's reducing that amount of processed food. So this kind of marking on food would actually help you do that. So we're seeing some quite interesting innovations that are health-based coming through from the food sector.
Brilliant.
This is Deb Tribe. Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We're talking food, nutrition, diets with Professor Andy Lowe, Director of Agri-Food and Wine at the University of Adelaide. One texter says, I'm celiac and started following the paleo diet 6 years ago. Best decision ever. Made my life so much better. Now, I don't know the detail of that, but it is looking at a lot of protein intake, isn't it? Often via meat. Would that be correct?
Yeah, look, the paleo diet has probably received some mixed receptions from nutritionists. I'm not a nutritionist, so I wouldn't really like to comment on the paleo diet.
And well, clearly, it's working for that person.
Clearly, if you're celiac, then you need to get professional advice for that.
Yeah.
But I think some of the basis, the paleo diet feeds into that, but things like Atkins diet and the new CSIRO diet really aim to reduce carbohydrate intake, but kind of balance the carbohydrate intake with protein. So Atkins is kind of an extreme version. It's kind of all protein, and you can have as much fat and other meat-based or animal-based products as you want. But of course, there's still the saturated fat element in that type of diet. So yeah, it may not be the healthiest alternative,
right,
but you will lose weight quickly.
Yeah, well, I've got another texter saying, currently doing the 8-16 intermittent fasting, only eat between 12 noon and 8 p.m., have lost 2 kilos in 4 weeks. It's creating a new habit. Now, Michael Mosley is responsible for us getting out there and experimenting, but I actually dropped a meal following that sort of same process, that you're kind of fasting every day in a way.
So I tried that as well, and it's quite easy to do. So Look, again, if we go back to Neolithic periods, you know, the Stone Age, we wouldn't have eaten every day. We would have had periods, go and hunt down a woolly mammoth and then gorge on that for 2 weeks and then not eat for a period after that. And periods of fasting, they allow the body to kind of reset. Your body will mop up excess fats and sugars within the system during that fasting period. And so, again, it can be very good. And so, and the type of fasting can be quite variable. You know, it can be a whole day or it can be certain periods of time. So certainly having a fasting element, there's good scientific grounds for that. Again, if you have medical conditions, it's probably not something
you need to be careful. Absolutely.
And you should seek advice. But there are good bases for fasting-based diets.
Damien says most of the land we graze cattle on in Australia isn't suitable for anything other than grazing due to low rainfall. What is proposed happens to that land if we take away livestock?
Look, that's a good question. If we look at the amount of land that's used in Australia and the amount of beef that's produced in Australia, we'd look at the beef production in Australia as being probably at the premium end of beef in the international market. So the problem is that when you really move to that very high intensity livestock production. So I think you could imagine a future where Australia continues to produce premium end beef, which is then exported internationally to an international market without too much impact here.
Okay.
But you still have to make room in the landscape for the biodiversity that's being driven to extinction by those changes in land use practices.
What a global balancing
act
that is.
That's right. So you have to have a global balance.
Yeah. Jamal has phoned in from Berry. Hi, Jamal. Have you got us, Jamal?
Yep.
Oh, right.
Hello. Yep.
Hi.
Just not so much a question, but it's more or less what we need to consider and what you just mentioned in regards to having our landscape is so diverse and it's very fragile and you only have to go 50 kilometres in one direction and suddenly what you can grow is not feasible due to our declining rainfall across the nation due to climate change. So therefore we need to consider what's going to be useful and also having a balance between growing cereals, vegetables and actually meat consumption as well. We need to have that system set up. And a lot of farmers, you talk to my cousins down southeast over in the Eyre Peninsula, and they've been using a three-field system for eons, ever since they've pretty much come from the old country, Europe, and to Australia, is one field will get rested, one will have cereal crop, and the other one will have basically a cattle on there of some description. And so therefore that'll get rotated. So we need that vast swathes of land in order to keep the landscape actually functional. Because if you don't rest one particular field, what'll end up happening is it'll get overutilized and basically you'll have no efficiency in the future out of it.
Okay, well, thanks, Jamal. I'll take that as a comment. Don't know if there's anything you wanted to add to that, Andy.
Yeah, there's some interesting things in that comment. First of all, you know, almost everything that we grow and produce here in Australia isn't originally from Australia. So all the cereals, all the veggies, all the livestock have pretty much been introduced from, the Middle East, from Europe, from Asia. So, and I think that trend towards what you might call more extensive farming, so lower intensity farming, is the way to balance with the management of the land. But the problem is that now, you know, we're hitting 7 billion people, we're projected to hit 10 billion people in another 20 years. Just the amount of food that needs to be produced to feed that population, those extensive methods of production of food aren't going to be able to do it. So we need to have a balance between caring for the environment and then very high-tech, very intensive methods of production. And I think so we're starting to see that diversification. We're starting to see the kind of premium end, which allows for cattle, good roaming, good rotation of the land, management of the soils, and then very high-tech kind of vertical farming, intensive farming, where you can produce lettuces, you know, in a period of 4 weeks, but you can produce them year-round in a vertical glasshouse with false light, and it's a kind of hydroponic system. And that will be the the main product that will feed the planet in these kind of more
austere times ahead.
Yeah, that's right. So whereas you'll spend money to then buy the premium products that are farmed in a more extensive way. That's where I think things are going for the future.
Yeah, well, look, I've got a few questions. We've only got you for a few minutes, but I have to say, Andy, we're not going to get to some of the other things I'd like to talk to you about. Andrew from Modbury rang and asks, what is the definition of processed food?
That's a good question. I think... you know, it's very easy to say what is processed and unprocessed. So obviously,
and you pick something off a tree,
vegetables,
it's not, yeah.
Fruits are completely unprocessed. Even bread is processed. But I think what we're looking at is highly refined cereals that have introduced sugars. Obviously, there's a spectrum between those two. But once you start milling something and mixing something, then you're moving down the processing spectrum.
So you could have a bowl of rolled oats with milk, and that's pretty good. But if you buy an energy rolled oat bar, not so good.
Well, you've got a mixture then of sugar coming in. And not all processed products are bad. I mean, that's,
We've got another couple of questions. Susan asks, what's the difference between a vegetarian and a vegan?
Yeah, so vegetarians will still consume some animal products, so eggs and milk. They'll still have kind of dairy-based products, whereas vegans will rule out all animal products. And they may be quite extreme vegans. They may not wear leather shoes or wear leather clothes. They go for an alternative instead. So it's only a plant-based product lifestyle.
Okay. And Dave says, I eat lots of eggs and dairy foods. Is there a limit that I should apply?
Yes. So I think current guidelines are 4 eggs a week. Look, I don't know the guidelines for the amount of milk. I think when you're younger, you could probably tolerate
4 eggs a week.
4 eggs a week.
I know. My daughter eats 4 eggs in one sitting.
Yeah. So...
Look, I hope you're listening.
There's a bit of saturated fat associated with eggs. But, of course, on the other side, on the flip side, they're the perfect protein source. And that's why bodybuilders consume eggs in large quantities.
Ken is saying he's following Michael Mosley's book Fast 800 and feeling much healthier and energized from that. Thanks, Ken. Roz says she's heard a podcast with a scientist saying that loading up with protein increases your cancer risk. Would that be all proteins or meat? Proteins?
Meat-based proteins would have a problem with that. I mean, with the meat-based protein, you're also getting a fat, saturated fat content, so that leads to problems with stroke risk and heart attack risk. But some of the hormones that are also used for meat production then also have a link to cancer.
Oh, dear.
So you can't eat carbohydrates because you're going to get fat. You can't eat fat because you're going to get fat. And you can't eat protein because you're going to die of cancer. So, you know, you have to take a kind of mixture between those. And so we will find, I think, as diets shift towards a more protein intensive, we're going to find some problems with just eating protein as well. It's not going to be completely without issues.
And we'll give the last word to Ron, who says, we've had the tyranny of distance and minimal refrigeration in Australia, and our food was seasonal. Each home had a large block of land to grow fruit, nuts, chickens, eggs, veggies. Today, those blocks of land are being subdivided. We can no longer grow our own, which is entirely contrary to what we discussed in Talkback Gardening this morning, which is the value of growing your own veggies. Mm. Well, we never got to protein alternatives and the new superfoods, Andy, so I'm going to have to get you back in, if you wouldn't mind, to talk about those.
Love to.
But look, thank you very much for coming in this morning. It's been great to talk food and diet. It's something that, you know, in our busy lifestyles often doesn't get the attention that we need to give it. So I appreciate you raising a few issues for us to think about this morning.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Deb.
Thank you. Professor Andrew Lowe is Director, Agri-Food and Wine at the University of Adelaide.